Hello and welcome to episode 6 of the Tribune podcast. Today we ask a very important question. Can German football learn anything from this current revolution in Spanish football? We're of course talking about football from the Royal Nation of Spain, one of Europe's most prominent countries in terms of developing football, and a country that has brought us 10 finalists in the last 5 seasons from the Champions League and Europa League. To decipher this question and to hopefully get some answers, I'm once again joined by Ross Dunbar, who, alongside myself, will hopefully be able to take a look and see, you know, why Spanish football is doing so well, and I know up against that, German football isn't. So, Ross, I think the best way to just jump straight into this is just to look at the facts on the paper. In terms of European domestic football, Spain is dominating.
Yeah, I mean, as we've seen in the last 5 years especially, there's been 10 finalists in the Champions League and the Europa League, and it seems as if it's a bit of a monopoly now for Spanish clubs in these competitions. Sevilla have won it 3 times in a row, which is unprecedented in that competition in the modern era. And German clubs have really underachieved. I mean, in terms of the Europa League especially, you know, the last kind of successful run in that tournament for a German club really was Werder Bremen getting to the final all the way back in 2009. And in that time, we've had German clubs doing well and you know, in kind of like sporadic little bursts of success. Hamburg have got to the semi-finals. Stuttgart have done well in a couple of competitions. Frankfurt have got to the latter rounds. But, you know, apart from this season, which was still disappointing, there's not really been a lot of success at all in that competition for German clubs. The last winner was Schalke all the way back in 97, and it's certainly worth, you know, asking the point, you know, for all that German football is lauded for being progressive and being of a high standard, why do German clubs struggle in these competitions? I mean, this year I think was a really good illustration of that. You know, I still think, regardless of Sevilla's success, Borussia Dortmund were by far the best team in that competition. I still no doubt about that for me, and would have been possibly quarterfinalists, semi-finalists in the Champions League. But when it came to the crunch, they were knocked out. You know, and you know, for all we can talk about teams being better and teams, you know, expecting to win or being more likely to win, end of the day, you've got to get the job done, and they didn't do it. You look at Schalke, and they were absolutely crushed by Shakhtar Donetsk. I mean, it's ridiculous, really. A club like Schalke certainly shouldn't be getting thrashed at home by Shakhtar. And Schalke's a really, obviously we've spoken about Schalke already and their kind of mismanagement and stuff like that, and that's a really important point, because Schalke have been in the Europa League so many times and they've been kind of dumped out in pretty embarrassing fashion. Okay, in the Champions League they've lost to Real Madrid, which is fair enough. But certainly the game against Shakhtar this year was the perfect illustration, I think, of maybe why German clubs aren't as successful. I think if you look at the style of play, the first point is that German clubs in the last, you know, 5-6 years have adopted this kind of gung-ho, let's go all out, let's press really high, let's just really go for the jugular type mentality. Whereas, I think if you watch a lot of Spanish football, for all that Barcelona play with a really quick pace and play with a lot of incision, I think if you look further down the league and you look at Villarreal, for example, if you look at Sevilla, you look at Valencia to an extent, Bilbao, when they were doing quite well, they play obviously a very possession-based game. Yeah, okay, and they do play with a lot of attacking quality, but they know how to put their foot in the ball, they know how to calm the games down, they know how to manage games. And Sevilla are probably one of the perfect kind of examples of that. For all that they, you know, have got good players and they've got a lot of experience, in big games they know how to deliver. You know, they went 1-0 down against Liverpool and they still managed to come back. You go back to the final last year against Dnipro, I think it was, they went 1-0 down, I think, or it was 1-0, 1-each, 2-1, 2-each, and they went on to win it. And I think that's a really, underrated quality about Spanish teams in the last, you know, kind of 10 years, is just how tactically intelligent they are, how well they manage big games, I think if you want to look at it from a player's perspective, Xabi Alonso, I mean, he's a great player, but I think he manages big games really, really well. And I don't know if you disagree with that or not, but I think he kind of embodies that. And I just watch German clubs sometimes, and they still want to go for the jugular, they still want to press, they still want to go for it. Okay, when Leverkusen lost to Villarreal, it was a bit different because Leverkusen were down to the bare bones, and they probably should have gone on to win the game, but some of the defending was haphazard, and that Spanish teams are clever enough to exploit it. So,
yeah, I mean, I think this season you could certainly look at the German teams that have been in Europe, and you could probably rhyme each one off. Well, not each one, most of them off to almost bad luck. For example, Gladbach, who, you know, were an exceptionally difficult group with Sevilla, Man City, and Juventus. I thought they gave a really good account of themselves, actually. Considering,
and if it wasn't for such a bad start, they might have had a chance of going through.
And they really, I mean, they ended up taking points off, you know, all. They didn't actually beat Man City, but they came close against Man City, a team who were playing same affair as the Champions League. They took points. I mean, they stayed unbeaten against Juventus, who were in the final the season before, and they obviously beat Sevilla, who went on to win Europa League. So, it's not as black and white, but we take Gladbach, for example, as a team who individually perhaps were a bit unfortunate, and then you have a team like Dortmund. Now, the thing about Dortmund is you can say, sure, they could have won the Europa League this season, and they could have maybe put Germany back on the map in that regard. But Dortmund should have never even been in the Europa League. They're far too good for the Europa League. It'd be like saying, in my opinion, saying something like, you know, Manchester United in Europa League, which, they, you know, obviously they were. But if they were going on to win that competition this season, I don't think you get anyone in England saying, oh, well, it goes to show how much strength and depth the English Premier League has. To me, the real standout problem here is the fact that Spain has two super clubs and Germany has one, or maybe one and a half. Just one, because Dortmund continue to lose players because they're not a super club. And I don't know whether or not the rest of the league is galvanised by the fact that they have these two teams who continuously keep the coefficients high, or whether that's something that stands in the way. I don't know whether the reason the Bundesliga... I don't know whether having an extra super club in the Bundesliga would help it in terms of Europe as a whole or not, because there must be a reason why the likes of Schalke and Bayer Leverkusen can't compete the same way Sevilla do. Now, another example, actually, I was meant to say this as well, Wolfsburg, actually, another example of a team who were perhaps just a little unlucky in the Champions League this season. Now, they did remarkably well, but then they come up against a Real Madrid team who obviously then go on and win the competition. So right there, you have two of the four teams in this season's Champions League who probably could have went further if they just were a little luckier with who they were marked against. The other one, Bayern Munich, obviously, who we all thought would have went further. They got knocked out by that persistent Atleti team. But I wonder if it's a cultural thing. I wonder if the reason Sevilla keep winning this competition is because they're the only damn team that want to win it. And because you look at the squads in this season's Europa League, and we were all obviously very galvanised by Dortmund and the thought of them going in to win the Europa League, but that kind of intrigue only really came about, only began to bubble after the new year, when people thought, oh, you know what, a trip down to Basel would actually be quite nice. You know, it's the thought of, you know, tens of thousands of Dortmund fans. I know, for example, I got quite excited at the thought of Schalke and Dortmund meeting each other in the final. So it wasn't actually anything to do with actually winning the competition. It was just the thought of reaching a final, which appealed to me as a neutral. And I think that's largely, I think that's the exact same thing that Liverpool fans had as well. I don't think Liverpool had any care much for winning the Europa League until it obviously became a point where they thought, if we win this thing, we get into the Champions League. And then obviously once they got to the final, the whole fan culture just galvanised it and brought it up. That seems to be something that's very prevalent in English football, where they just don't seem to have an interest in it. And I think it's also something that's far more prevalent in German football than German football is willing to admit. Schalke against Shakhtar was actually quite an upset. I actually thought they were going to beat Shakhtar in the return leg. But as we spoke about, Schalke are a complete mess. Bayer Leverkusen, though, for example, if you plot their form in the Bundesliga season before and after the Europa League campaign, It's night and day, and I think Roger Smith, the coach, and his backroom staff were probably well aware of that, and that could be a perfect example of why they neither seemed bothered about either staying or continuing on their Europa League campaign. So I think perhaps the main problem is that we have, in fact, now that I just talked this through, one thing that really pops into my head is that in Spain there's a really, really clear distinction between Bayern Munich and Real Madrid. They're the super clubs. And then sure, you have Atleti, but that's not entirely, that's not something that's entirely organic, the way that they've been formed as the club that they are today, which we can talk about later on. And then you have the rest, and the rest all want to do something. They want to do something. They can't win the league title, so they go for Europa League. The reason I wonder now if that's not so prevalent in the Bundesliga is because that distinction isn't as clear. We have here Bayern Munich, who are great, but regardless of what people might think have happened over the last three or four seasons, there is usually one club who can challenge them, at least one. So you have your Dortmunds, your Werder Bremens, or even your Wolfsburgs. And then you also have about five or six clubs who probably think they should be challenging. So you have teams, you probably have the likes of Schalke, Bayer Leverkusen, example, who think they're too good for Europa League, even though they're not good enough for the Champions League.
Yeah, I think that gap between Bayern Munich and the rest is still very, very big. I mean, whether or not Schalke have got a huge fan base or not, I think... You know, the reality is there's a massive gap between the two clubs. But I mean, I think it's just a wider trend. I mean, European football, there are four or five super clubs, and that's just the way it is. I mean, I don't think that's any different in Spain than it is to Germany. Atletico Madrid have been really kind of formed out of Simeone's personality, his character, his ability to manage that squad. I'm not really too sure it's a case of Atletico Madrid being really well managed. I'm not convinced it is, to be honest. I think, you know, they've recruited fairly well, but they've spent, you know, fairly decent sums of money on fairly big players. I mean, Fernando Torres was playing up front in the final. He's a very experienced player. Antoine Griezmann was, one of the kind of hottest properties in Europe at the time when he went there. So I'm not sure that that's necessarily a consistent thing. I think it's a case of, you know, they've really punched above their weight in the last two or three years. But obviously now with the economic situation in Spain improving, the new TV contract coming in at the perfect time for Atletico Madrid, because they've just been bought, you know, 20% by a Chinese company. So they've got a lot of external investment now. They're moving to a new stadium and they're going to have this TV contract. So all the economic factors have all worked in their favour. So they will be there for a few years, I think. Regarding Sevilla's, you know, success in the last couple of years, it's interesting that this year has actually been their poorest year domestically for a few years. I mean, the last couple of years when they've been competing for the final, they've also been competing to be in the top four, because obviously this idea of qualifying for the Champions League wasn't actually there until last year. So Sevilla domestically were still delivering big performances. They've got a really good home record against the big sides, and they managed to qualify in the top four, got into the Champions League again. And this year, I think they were like maybe 7th or 8th at the time of the semi-finals. So the only way they were going to get into the Champions League was by winning the Europa League. But at the same time, you know, I think, I don't really know how much that actually stands for, because Schalke wanted to win the Europa League, Dortmund wanted to win the Europa League, Leverkusen wanted to win the Europa League, but they obviously were decimated by injuries at that point in the season. Obviously after that, and things got a little bit better for them in the league, but I'm not really too sure how much it's down to mentality. I just think that there's a lot in football that's a bit of luck. Sometimes it goes in cycles. I mean, the Dortmund game, you know, I know that it was a bit of a freak, but I think Thomas Tuchel got shown up a little bit in that game. And that maybe is not a very popular opinion, but I thought, you know, why were they defending with a really high line when they were losing, was it 3, when it came back to 3-3? They should have dropped back, and Spanish teams would have been intelligent enough to do that.
Well, let me pick you up on that, because you mentioned that point earlier on, and it's something I wanted to come back to. The style of play that Spanish clubs play, style of football that Spanish clubs play, it's not something I really paid much attention to, because I don't really watch many Spanish clubs unless they're playing German teams in the Europa League or Champions League. But during the final on Saturday, it's something that I very quickly picked up on. It's actually something I tweeted about. I said, is Spanish football always this .. boring? You know, because both teams were playing this very standoffish, almost waiting to pounce on the other. It's not, I wouldn't go so far as to say it was counter-attacking. It was almost just defensive, actually, more than anything else. Both teams are playing deep lines. There's so much space in midfield. And both teams are so preoccupied with trying to mark the other defenders. And I wonder if Spanish football has a much greater emphasis on the way that it plays its football, and just simply from that style of football which we saw from Real Madrid and Atleti, was they're far more willing to adapt to playing against teams who will attack them. And I don't know if that's actually that noticeable in German football, because you mentioned, you know, how the kind of modern style of German football outside of maybe Pep Guardiola, although I don't think he's too different from what happened with Klopp, is that it's very in-your-face, very attack-minded. We're going to score as many goals as we can, and then we'll see what happens at the back. We see that from Leverkusen, we see it from Dortmund. Bayern Munich, under Pep, have played a high line to their peril throughout his time at the club. And it's the complete opposite to what we saw from Real Madrid and Atleti on Saturday. Do you think, how much of a role do you think the style of play in Spain is helping them against than against German teams?
I think it's hard to say. It's hard to generalise everyone, because I think they're all kind of different in some ways. I mean, you mentioned there about German clubs being in your face. I actually think a lot of the kind of recent German clubs, the way in terms they play, I think it's very similar to actually British football, the way it used to be. I think that may sound a bit odd to maybe someone who doesn't watch the Bundesliga every week, but the amount of long balls you see, the amount of like kind of really aggressive pressing, you know, chasing after the ball, chasing after the ball basically most of the time. I find that very strange, and especially at times when German clubs should be a little bit more coy, a little bit more savvy. I don't think they have been, and you know, I mean, obviously we're now approaching a time with international football, but I think that's probably one of the reasons why the German national team was so successful at the World Cup, because they adapted to situations. They weren't going into tournaments playing a traditional German style where they were counter-pressing and they were pressing high. They played so many different ways in that one competition. Do you know what I mean? And I don't think, if you look at Leverkusen, for example, Roger Schmidt, I am not sure that he's adapted as adaptable and as flexible as what he should be. I think German, and I think that's a really interesting piece in one of the German newspapers a couple of months ago, talking about this new generation of German coaches, you know, for example, like Klopp, Tuchel, Schmidt, Weinziel, Martin Schmidt, etc. In Germany they would call them laptop coaches, because they're obviously they're young and hip and do their own thing. But I wonder if there is an element of truth to that they're maybe not as flexible as what they think, because we saw with Jurgen Klopp at Dortmund, he got found out when his first plan was countered. Tuchel, I think, is a bit different, because I think he's really outstanding and has all those different ideas. But obviously, he got caught out against Liverpool. So, I mean, there's that element to it as well. I don't know. I think there's so many different parts to it. I think football goes in cycles, and Spain at the moment has the virtue of having two super clubs. It has the two best players in the world, three best players in the world, four best players in the world, maybe. I think German clubs, yeah, I've got a lot to learn, a lot to improve, not just on the pitch but off it. If you look at Sevilla, for example, let's take Sevilla and compare them to say Schalke, because Schalke have been in the Europa League quite a few times and they've really disappointed. You look at the management of Sevilla the last few years. Look at what Monchi has done in terms of the transfers, you know, buying in young players, developing them, and selling them on for big profits. But then also buying good experienced players. I mean, he said like one of his best signings in an interview in the Guardian last week was Freddy Kuniti. You know what I mean? Like, I look at Schalke, and their transfer policy for the last 5 years, 6 years under Horst has just been scattergun approach. So interesting to see how that changes. Obviously, as well, the whole German bubble is quite a new thing. It's not as mature as it is in Spain. I think that was one of my points that I'd noted down, that the whole development model in Spain is more mature. The players they bring out, I think, are better. The younger players they bring out. In Germany, I think when a young player comes through, everyone goes mental for them, even though they maybe aren't that good yet. We don't know how they're going to develop. We don't know what they're going to achieve in their career. But I think Spanish teams bring through so many good, high-quality young players that they don't have to throw these guys as being superstars, because they're bringing through such a high quality.
I don't know if youth production is a problem. I think German football probably brings just as many good young players as Spain. Maybe not as many, but
but as good though. I mean, for example, I mean,
well, they just won the World Cup, so they're still making. They're obviously making but how good many, enough players.
But how many? How much of that was down to bringing? You know, okay, all those guys who came through, Müller, Özil, etc., was quite a special bunch. But all this talk about someone like Max Meyer, for example, or Julian Draxler. These are good players who are really hyped up to be superstars in Germany. However, compared to, I don't know, Denis Suarez from Villarreal, who I think is an excellent player, could go on to really better things. You know, guys play for Valencia, Andre Gomez and guys like that, who they've brought in. Alcacer, the striker. There's such an array of young players in Spain that I'm not really sure they have to build them up because it's such a high quality of them. And I think maybe there is an element of that too. I mean, the Spain development model has been going for, you know, 10 years longer than the German one. Mm. You know, Fernando Torres was coming through at a time when Germany was just getting its development model into place, so...
I think, I mean, that's fair enough. That's a fair enough point. I think it's more broader than that. I actually think the ethos or the style of football that they play in Spain actually does play a huge part. And I think that probably, I think that's more like something that's really stuck in the roots, like really right in there with the weeds of the way that the Spanish league or Spanish football as a whole is put together. I think kids are brought up to play a certain style of football, and it's ingrained in them, irrespective of the coach. I mean, Zinedine Zidane doesn't really play a huge part in how Real Madrid play their football. Diego Simeone does play a large part in how Atletico play their football, but the players still all know how to play the exact same way. And you know, it's much the same at Barcelona as well. For large parts of that Barcelona squad, the way that the club's built up, the manager is probably one of the least important parts of it, which I might not, Barcelona fans might not like to hear that, but I think that's just simply a fact. And I think that's also the case when you go down the league system as well. And I think that's because they have, you know, as you've been saying, they've got this structure that's been in place longer. But not only the fact that they have a structure, it's the fact that they're so content with their structure. And they are quite happy to say, right, this is the one we're going to stick with. It brings results. I don't know if that's a confidence thing which has been instilled since they won the World Cup and won European Championships. And they think, right, well, it's worked internationally, so the clubs can play that way and it works. The interesting thing is that Spain won the World Cup playing a style of football. Germany didn't. Germany, under Jogi Löw, tried to play like Spain. That was his whole thing. He was determined to turn the German national team into the next Spanish national team. It didn't work. And then Germany ended up winning the World Cup by playing this kind of morphed style of football, which was, it just took something from all sorts. There wasn't any distinguishable style. There's no way you could show that World Cup campaign in Brazil to a bunch of 14-year-olds in Schalke and say, right, I want you to go play that style of football, because it just doesn't exist. It's just living world-class footballers getting the job done, in my opinion. And so that's what stands out for me. Spanish players know how, from such a young age, know how to play. Now, the thing that really interests me is that coming from the UK, and you know what I'm talking about, we're absolutely sick of hearing about this kind of conversation. What kind of football should we play? The Spanish do it this way, the Italians do it this way. Why aren't we doing this thing? It's something that English football almost devours itself talking about. I don't hear this conversation in Germany. I don't feel like there's any real urge or necessity to sit down and say, what kind of football do we want to play? There's no ethos from, you know, under 15s all the way to the senior clubs at any of these teams, perhaps maybe Bayern excluded, but I'm not even sure if they are, just considering how fractured that club were to an extent from coach to coach when Pep was there. So what I see is that even though when you watch Atleti play Barcelona, it looks like two teams playing two different styles of football, I think each club actually in their youth teams, they're all playing the same kind of football. I think every youth team in Spain is probably playing the same style of football, and every club at its very base level plays the same kind of football, and then a manager comes in and tweaks one or two things. And I think that is why, largely why we have Spanish clubs who can go into Europe, they can sit back and they're confident in the ball, and then why we have teams like Leverkusen and Schalke who at times can go into the Champions League and look like, you know, like their hair's on fire and they're running around like fools. I mean, Wolfsburg were actually a fair enough example of this. Wolfsburg did well the Champions League season when they sat back defensively and just tried to play football that allowed them to sit back, because they struggled in the Bundesliga because of all sorts of reasons. But when they have that emphasis to attack, like they do in the Bundesliga, they're expected to beat teams in the Bundesliga. And when they have the expectation on them, they struggled. But from what I remember, Klaus Allof saying is like in the Champions League, no one expects us to win these things. So they can sit back, they're more relaxed, and play a style of football.
Is that a problem there in a nutshell? That Wolfsburg, who were the second team in Germany last year, the team that before the start of the season people expected to challenge Bayern, they're not expected to win those games in the Champions League.
Yeah, it could be.
I don't know. I certainly, obviously, we can talk about the company club idea in another podcast. It's quite a large issue that we can get into. But certainly, and I've said it before, with Leverkusen especially, that's a club where there's not a lot of pressure. There really isn't a lot of pressure. Leverkusen could have a bad year. Nobody cares. You know, it would just be pass it off as being a bad year. Who cares? They'll come back. Likewise with Wolfsburg. You know, I know that they lost to Real Madrid at home, but the performance in that Real Madrid game away from home was really, really poor. It was all over the place. I mean, Dieter Hecking, I think, tactically was showing up in that game. The team had no structure. Defensively, it was poor. But then, is that a mentality issue in German football? You know, that players can go to these clubs, Wolfsburg, Leverkusen, Hoffenheim to an extent, and there's not a lot of pressure. In Spain, I don't really think that's the case. I mean, I'm not really too sure about the pressure as much, but they don't have clubs where there's a kind of an immaturity about them, almost. You know, if you look at Spanish teams who do well in Europe, Sevilla, Atleti, Valencia, Bilbao, whatever, they're all big clubs, you know, with a structure in place. And most of the time, their managers are not, these guys build up to be philosophers or being tacticians or being, you know, I don't know. Tactician's probably the wrong word to use. They're probably, you know, like Thomas Tuchel, like Klopp, etc. Unai Emery, vastly experienced. Such an experienced coach. He's been doing the rounds for such a long time. Juan de Ramos with Sevilla. And Juan de Ramos didn't do very well in England, but in Spain, he does well most of the time. So, well, we've reached an impasse, clearly.
We have.
And now we have the wonderful Irish wisdom of Miguel Delaney, of ESPN, Sunday Independent. Half Irish, half Spanish. It's quite exotic. Just back from Milan, Champions League final. And be interested to hear what he thinks about how well Spanish clubs have done in the last few years.
Okay, Miguel, so you were in Milan for the final. Two Spanish teams. This isn't the first time we've seen this in the last couple of seasons. Is there one specific rule or factor that suggests that why Spanish clubs in particular are doing so well, or is it simply individual cases across the three super clubs, if you'd like to call them that?
Well, I suppose you would normally say that it's just the extreme wealth of Real and Barca, particularly since, I mean, they're so dominant in their league, and maybe the fact that Atletico, even though they're not exactly poor by the standards of most clubs, they are... they don't have anything near the resources of the Super 2. So in that case, you would say it's just the influence of a super manager in that sense. But the very fact that even that stat that there's only been one Spanish team knocked out by a non-Spanish team in the last 40 or so ties, it shows that there's something deeper there. And I would say, I mean, we've heard it so many times, and being half Spanish and being a supporter of a club that are now in the second division, Osasuna, we've all heard so many times about the issues of Spanish football. And there is so much dysfunction at a structural level, which makes it all the more amazing there is such success. So you would really have to put it down to the fundamentals of the coaching. I mean, they were probably quite fortunate in that way, and despite so many issues with the football infrastructure, at the very root of it, they've put in place what seems an exceptional coaching structure. And it's possibly comparable to the Dutch in that way, until basically we're now seeing the with the Dutch, because they're a smaller country and they haven't been able to resist the realities of modern football economics so much because of that size, the effects of their coaching is beginning to be mitigated. But for so long that kept their clubs at the top of the game and their players at the top of the game, because Spain is a much bigger country, it seems that its coaching can overcome so many other issues the country has. So, I mean, I think that's combined with the supreme wealth of the super clubs Real and Barca has combined to basically to create this supremacy for Spanish teams.
Yeah, I mean, Ross and I spoke earlier on the podcast about how it really does seem there does seem to be a type of football that's played throughout the country. I know on the face of it, Atletico may play a different type of football from Real Madrid or Barcelona, but it's almost as if there's a framework in place for every club, and that doesn't really seem to be the case in Germany or England. And Pep Guardiola tried to bring some form of style of football to Bayern, and it didn't really seem to work out by and large. Could you simplify it to the point of saying that the way the Spanish play football just gives them a competitive advantage against, you know, German or English teams of similar size?
Well, I think every single player seems to have a sensational technical base, just saying something. And I suppose that's the major consequence of that coaching. It almost seems quite a simplistic thing, but it is such a fundamentally important thing that if you can kick a ball to a very, very high level, you've got that immediate inherent advantage. Now, to be honest, when you contacted me about the podcast, I was actually thinking about this issue. You would think that because Germany, not certain population size, but I think it's bigger than Spain. Double check that. Because of its own huge size, Germany, and because, to be honest, it is it tends to industrialize these things to a more sophisticated level in Spain. You would think that it would translate more to German football in that way. That even if it's not as lucrative a league or as enticing a league in terms of being able to buy the absolute best foreign stars, although Bayern are starting to change that with some of the signings they've made this summer in particular, but you would think that would translate more, that the coaching would bring better European results. But I do wonder whether maybe Germany is still kind of it's still almost going through this transition, because I was thinking about it in relation to something Wenger said recently and in relation to the national team. I remember, I was at the World Cup in 2014, and that, I think, three or four German games, including the final. But what really struck me was actually when I watched, and maybe it shows when a particularly weak team, when I was in Cologne in October 2013 and they played Ireland, and it was 3-0 against a weak Irish side, but it could have been about 8 or 9 because Germany was just toying with them. I remember just the technique of the players and the way they're playing. It did remind me a lot of the Spanish approach and the technique-based possession. And that's obviously something that Guardiola has been trying to bring into Bayern. But you do wonder then whether, for all the progressive changes they've made in football, that they still need to kind of unify some inherent with this approach being being taught to the players. It was Wenger that made the point recently. I think you actually see it with the German national squad. The type of coaching that's in vogue now in Spain, in Germany, in major European academies, is producing basically a conveyor belt of these highly accomplished kind of general midfield players, general attacking midfield. They've got supreme sophistication and touch in tactical awareness, in technical ability. But it's not producing specialists like attackers. And you can completely see that with the fact that Yogi Löw has called up Podolski again. I have to go back to Mario Gomez. And Spain have had a similar problem. They haven't really produced anything like David Villa. So they have a lot of the same type of player. And a lot of the same type of player in the German side at that level, it doesn't necessarily translate, I think, to some of the football you see German sides play, particularly those like Leverkusen or Wolfsburg in the last few years. So I do wonder where. I mean, this is coming from someone who's more from watching from an English and Spanish perspective, and Irish perspective, sadly, than a German. But it did get me wondering whether there is a very, very slight disconnect between the elite players that Germany is producing for its international side and the type of football that is still reigning in its club game. I don't know how you feel about that.
Yeah, I mean, we just before we had you on, we did make the point that when Löw first came in as the German national team coach, it seemed that he was very intent on developing Germany the same way that Spain were developed and how Spain became world champions, even right down to the style in which they played football and the way he tried to incorporate Götze as a false striker. It seems as though it's really interesting when you make a point there about how Germany, a really well-developed industrial nation, can bring in, can really focus on specific issues and try and bring them into their own game, To the point now where Germany has a similar problem with a lack of strikers like Spain. I wonder if the reason that it works better for Spain is A, because perhaps they've just been at it longer, or the fact that perhaps Spain doesn't have the same resources. So where Germany have picked something up and ran a mile with it, Spain, in the fact that they're not as developed perhaps at a national level, correct me if I'm wrong here, it seems more natural that the way they develop players when Germany seem far more specific to try and copy. So, you know, almost perhaps that they can't see the trees for the woods in the fact that they're trying to copy Spain to such a degree. Would that be fair?
Yeah, probably. And it's probably worth saying that I think maybe Spain has a little bit more, it brings a bit more variety into its own football because there's a high Latin American influence. And because, I suppose, ultimately, but because of the climate and the league and the fame of Real Barca, it is that bit more attractive to foreign players coming and some foreign coaches coming. All at the same time, England has obviously had that advantage, if not the climate, but it hasn't had much influence in terms of results there, although I do wonder whether that will change. But yeah, I think there is probably something as well in the idea that, I mean, it's still relatively young in terms of development in a German sense, and I suppose it's the nature of modern football. We're kind of looking at this in an immediate short term thing, when really, I mean, this is a process that's ongoing for over a decade, and it's still in process. So in terms of Germany, we're not at any type of endpoint. But I do wonder whether in the next few years we will see kind of more of an integration between the national team style and some specific club styles, because it is from an outsider's perspective, the way I've almost seen it the past years, you've got kind of the ultimate in this, in what this coaching and what this Spanish or initially Dutch style coaching influence in what Guardiola has tried at Bayern, and they've almost kind of out-Barca his old Barca in that way. Then almost the next level down from that, you've got what the German national team play, which involves a lot of possession, and then you've got what, you know, possibly unfair on individual managers and teams in the German league, but there is the kind of what you consider a general German style. I mean, I remember even watching Germany in the 2010 World Cup, I suppose. The way they played was still so much more reactive and slicker, I suppose. I mean, I think it reminded me of Ralph, a lot of what they did in that 2010 World Cup, particularly in the game against England and Argentina, where they scored four in both of those. It reminded me a lot of that, of what is it, Ralph Ragnick's old kind of rule about how...
Yeah.
About doing it in six seconds, basically.
Yeah.
You know, trying to be as quick as possible. Whereas then, in 2014, and in the build-up to 2014, they seemed much more... I don't think prosaic's the wrong word, but it seemed much more drawn out, more gearing toward that Spanish style. So it might just be an ongoing learning process.
Yeah. Miguel, very busy man. I'll ask you one more question and I'll let you run off. If we can maybe take a step back and look at the whole Spanish football as a whole. One of the things that we discussed on the podcast tonight was the fact that when you simply look at it, Spain has two super clubs, Germany has one. Everyone likes to have a good moan about the top clubs when they win the competitions, when they win all the trophies, but... is there a sense that maybe Spanish football has benefited from Real Madrid and Barcelona, simply where England, which hasn't really had a super club that dominates in England, or in Europe rather, for quite some time, and Germany in a sense only has one, and similarly in France perhaps to a lesser extent, is there a sense that because Spain has these two super clubs, almost like trickle-down economics perhaps, is there something like that going on in Spain?
Not just in terms of kind of run-off maybe players moving there as well. I suppose there's also the very real fact that when you've played Barca and Real, and you're going to play them have four of those games over a season, anything else seems like much less of a challenge, really, unless you're playing Bayern Munich, basically. So I mean, maybe that's an issue, too. But the one point I would stress, I suppose, and I've often talked about this in the last few years, particularly this season, because almost every year... And particularly with the slight decline in the Spanish national team, although maybe some of that is more down to the fact that Vicente del Bosque has passed his own bet and has been too loyal to old players. But every year you must expect Spain to drop off at more, almost because of the amount of the stories you hear about function within the game itself. And while I don't think it's a miracle that Spain have succeeded in spite of that dysfunction, it is quite a remarkable process that the coaching, the pure coaching has been able to override so much that is wrong with the Spanish game. I mean, we're talking about a country where, you know, they can't even settle on fixtures within 3 weeks of a game taking place, which is what illustrates the scale of some of the issues here. But despite that, when it finally comes to the European fixtures, they're an example for every other country.
Well, there you have it, folks. Another week, another episode, and another topic well and truly answered. I'd love to thank Miguel Delaney for coming on the show this week and offering his expertise, and of course, Ross Dunbar for once again debating rigorously with me over almost any topic we can find. If you guys are enjoying yourselves and enjoying this podcast and this series of podcasts, then please, of course, once again, be sure to get on iTunes and send us a review and rank us. And of course, if you like what you're listening to, you can of course get in touch with us on Twitter at Tribune Podcast. And we're of course on Facebook there as well. And we'll see you next week for the very next episode in the Tribune Podcast.